Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Recovery time, specifically sleep, or just like fun time to play and let go and just have fun, is absolutely essential to that healthy lifestyle and being able to reboot and re-energize from your day, because we need to literally go offline to reboot, you know? And so allocate play and recovery time builds from the adopting a healthy lifestyle. Then third, avoid unnecessary stress. So I talk about the ACE method, which is a holistic, new, refreshing way to look at stress, to reframe stress. The way to ACE stress using the ACE method is through awareness, change, and empowerment.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Doing creative work can be kind of lonely, and that's why we built the Unmistakable Listener Tribe. The Tribe is a community for professionals to connect and support each other. Everything is designed to help you grow your business and share what's working and what isn't. And that's true whether you're a business owner or an artist. You'll get access to feedback, live conversations with guests, and so much more. By joining the Tribe, you become part of a community of creators who all support each other, and it's completely free. Hopefully I'll see you there. Visit unmistakablecreative.com/tribe to join. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/tribe. Nuz, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I actually found out about your book when I was just browsing my phone one late night and, you know, going through the Google News thing. And I saw this book that had been written by somebody who was Steve Jobs' former assistant. I was like, wait a minute, I have to figure out what this book is. And when I got it, I immediately bought it because my roommate was doing similar work. I was like, you have to read this book. And then I tore through it in about 2 days. And I thought, this is something that our listeners absolutely have to hear about. But before we get into all of that, now, I want to start by asking you, what is one of the most important things that one or both of your parents taught you that have influenced and shaped who you've become and what you've done with your life?
Wow, I love that question. Well, they always told me from the very beginning to always be myself. They always had a lot of trust in me. And whenever I would go to them for advice or, you know, if I was just unsure of something, they would just always say, be yourself. And that has never proven wrong. I mean, being myself, my authentic self has always gotten me where I need to be. So I really love that advice that they've given me. And it has really shaped who I am today.
Okay. So that advice is something that I think I fear, you know, hear echoed often through popular culture. And often I think there's context in that advice that is missing when people follow it. Because if you're being yourself and you're a horrible person, that doesn't really help anybody. So can you expand on what you mean by that? And also talk about how people misinterpret that advice.
Well, my parents obviously don't think that I'm a horrible person. If not, they would say, be yourself, but much better and try to be a better person, not necessarily be yourself, but be better. I have always been a perfectionist and sometimes to my detriment. And I think that being myself, I have a high, very high standard for myself and others. And so when I'm myself, it's just naturally at a high standard compared to maybe someone who, you know, doesn't have high standards or doesn't work on themselves to be a better person every day. And it really is a work in progress. Like, no one's perfect by any means. I'm not perfect. And, you know, like, as perfect as I can be, there's always work and improvement. And hence the business I'm in, I'm always developing myself and helping others develop themselves. So being yourself is a work in progress in terms of always being able to improve yourself if you're up for the work.
Yeah. So did your parents encourage any particular career paths? I mean, we're both talking about the fact that we come from very similar backgrounds. And I wonder, did you get sort of the typical Indian kid narrative of, oh, become a doctor, lawyer, engineer?
Yeah. I mean, that was typical because that's kind of what they knew. But they also, what's typical in our family is that, but also being an entrepreneur. So most of my, especially from my mother's side, were entrepreneurs. And that was something that I always knew I wanted to be. Didn't know exactly in what way, but wanted to venture out and do my own thing and really make an impact in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I remember correctly, you actually left Iran in the midst of a revolution. You came here to the United States. What did you find challenging about adapting to a new culture? What felt familiar? What did you dislike and what did you like?
Well, this question would be best asked to my brother, because my brother was 9 years old when we moved. I was only 2, so I didn't really remember. Okay. I really was raised here, but I know for him, you know, just adjusting to the different culture in terms of, you know, what people were like and just everyday life, it was just so different. And he had a very hard time adjusting, but I definitely did not, because I was only 2. So I pretty much was raised in San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay. So you mentioned this perfectionist tendency, and I wonder how that played out in your earlier life. Were you one of these sort of straight A kids in high school who had, you know, crazy high standards for yourself and got disappointed every time you got less than an A?
Yeah. A minus was horrible. Like, really horrible. I'm like my biggest critic. I've been working on that. And even in my book, I talk about your inner critic versus inner coach. And, you know, I apply that to myself all the time. And it's just about being more, you know, kind and gentle with yourself, because we tend to be nicer and more accepting and compassionate with other people. But then when it comes to yourself, at least for me, I'm always harder on myself, and I've gone a lot better since I was younger, but that perfectionism really can get the better of me when I'm not as mindful as I am today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that because I know you go into detail in the book about some of this stuff. So what's been the trajectory of your career that's actually led you to writing this book and doing the work that you do and you know, building the company that you have?
Well, my first job out of college was as Steve Jobs' executive assistant at Apple, and he was my first boss and mentor. And that job kind of happened as an accident. I did not seek it. I did not think I'm going to get it. I didn't even want it at the time, but I ended up getting it and thought it would be, you know, bad choice not to accept it. I accepted it because he hired me on the spot and I thought, you know, it would be a great experience. And so I took it as a temporary stop on my professional map, if you will. And from there, I went on to work at another tech startup. And then I started in sales, various sales roles at Yahoo and AstraZeneca to just get some diversity in my work experience and skill sets. And I met a lot of really interesting people and, you know, loved my jobs, each one in the beginning. But then there was something like a staleness that crept in slowly but surely after some time, after kind of perfecting that job in my mind, you know, getting up to speed and doing really well and surpassing numbers in my sales roles. I just got bored and I was really just unfulfilled. And I was always in a constant battle with my alarm clock every morning when it would go off and I knew I had to get the day started. I just was not motivated or determined to hit the ground running like I am today as an entrepreneur. I just knew something had to shift and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So it was a long time, you know, in the making of trying to figure that out and taking explorative action to figure out what is it that I want to do to, you know, create the life that makes me want to jump out of bed, makes me not have to have an alarm clock, or if I need an alarm clock, be excited when that alarm goes off and really hit the ground running and just have more purpose and passion in my life. And so while I was exploring corporate America on the side, I was also exploring different areas where I can potentially start my own company, exploring what my passions are and how I could turn my passion into my purpose and profession. And my mother had gotten me into yoga. She took me into my first yoga class. Then years later, like a decade later, she got me into meditation. So those two things were kind of my grounding, you know, points that like of my daily practices. My yoga meditation was everything to me, and it just made me feel so good that I wanted to help others in a way to incorporate that. So I did end up becoming a certified yoga instructor. Thought I would open up a yoga studio back in the early 2000s, and, you know, also a wellness center, because I was really into, you know, healthy lifestyle at that point. And I really wanted to help people who were stressed and, you know, wanted to adopt a healthier lifestyle through, you know, yoga and just healthy habits and behaviors. But I ended up getting sucked back into the corporate world when I got a job offer at Yahoo, which was the Google of its time. So put that on hold. And then simultaneously, years later, decided to go back to school to become a holistic health coach. And that's when I really like started realizing no more putting my passion and purpose on hold, because the money is, you know, I was basically wearing the golden handcuffs. So the money was very good, and the benefits was very good in terms of, you know, working for someone else. It was a big risk to just like leave that the cush job and the whole golden handcuffs to start my own business. But one trip kind of changed my life, which was a trip to India. And I spent 6 weeks there on a life transforming trip where I had I don't know, like very profound experiences with a monk that I had been in silence for 19 years. I meditated with him in his cave for an afternoon, followed by a 5-day teaching at the Dalai Lama's residence and in Dharmashala. And it just, the day I got back, I mean, that 6 weeks changed my life. The day I got back, I quit my job at AstraZeneca as a pharma sales rep at that time. I quit my job. I could not live another day not living my passion and purpose. I just knew that I wanted to start my own corporate wellness company, because that was kind of in the making when I went back to school to be a holistic health coach. And the reason I wanted corporate wellness was because all my experience in corporate for a decade and all those different companies, there was no employee well-being programs. There were no tools, strategies, or support to help stressed out individuals, employees like myself at the time. And I saw a real gap that needed to be filled and bridged. And also, I saw there was a societal gap when I was calling on doctors. About 8 doctors a day, I would go to their office. And at the time, I realized that, you know, people were going to the doctor's offices with their chief complaint, mostly related to stress, but the doctors didn't have enough time to go through like the underlying causes and lifestyle choices and, you know, what the underlying causes are of their chief complaint. And so being a, you know, holistic health and wellness coach and bringing corporate wellness to companies, I thought would help that gap, bridge that gap, basically, and be able to make a larger impact, because we spend most of our time at work, right? So why not bring it to companies? Because people are, you know, not getting the support, at least back then, now much more so, but they were not getting the support they needed to be able to thrive, and not just at work, but in life, you know? And so I wanted to help basically the old version of myself who is stressed, unfulfilled, and really be able to address, you know, people's chief complaints.
Yeah. So now I remember what it was that got my attention. I think it was an article on CNBC that was about the fact that you were Steve Jobs' assistant, and it was about the misperceptions that we have from sort of the folklore that we hear about what he was actually like. And I think that that was one of the things that struck me. So what are the misperceptions that people have about what it's like to work with somebody like him? And what are the lessons that you've learned, which I'm sure there are probably more than enough to write 10 books, that have influenced and shaped, you know, what you ended up doing later on?
Well, the biggest misperception was that, you know, he wasn't healthy, he didn't take care of himself, and that's why he died of pancreatic cancer. But I saw firsthand up close and personally that actually he had cracked the code way before anyone else on prioritizing self-care and taking that holistic approach to well-being, which is what I base all of my teachings on, because he would meditate daily. He would exercise regularly several times a week with a personal trainer. He had strong relationships, you know, especially with his family. He had a profound passion and purpose building Apple, all of these things. And he ate healthily. And so all of these things contribute to make him and whoever is practicing these healthy habits their best self. Like, they're able to show up and be super focused. Steve was super focused, laser focused. And he really knew like how to take care of himself so that he can innovate, be creative, and have the energy and focus that he needed to build Apple the way it turned out to be.
Yeah. What about in terms of the personality traits, the crazy outbursts and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who are, you know, iconic legends, iconic visionaries tend to be, you know, have a little bit different personalities. And he, I think that stemmed mostly from his perfectionism too. So like, I can personally relate. I don't condone that behavior by any means. Like, it definitely was not, you know, helpful, but he definitely pushed people beyond their limits in a good way, because he would see people's potential when they couldn't. And they would actually realize later, not everyone, but some would realize, wow, I actually was able to do that because Steve, you know, had that belief in me. And they were able to accomplish more than what they thought they could because Steve had that vision. And high expectation, of course. He really did demand excellence, and most iconic visionaries do, you know. So I think with good reason, yes, there could be definite room for improvement, and that people shouldn't be treated, you know, disrespectfully. So I definitely don't condone that behavior, but he was definitely an intense man.
Yeah. So one more question about this, and we'll get into the book. We had Justine Musk here, Elon's ex-wife, and you know, she had written this piece that you might have come across a while back that was an answer on Quora when some kid asked, how can I become great like Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, and Elon Musk? And there's one thing that struck me in my conversation with her, and that was she said that this is not something that can be learned. She said, I don't want to be all deterministic, but you know, this is just how these people are, and this is an extreme way to go about life. And you've had a front row seat to somebody like that, somebody that so many people use as a role model for success. And yet I kind of wonder, having seen Steve Jobs up front, do you think that that is healthy for people to put somebody like him on a pedestal and make somebody like him their standard for success?
Well, all his positive attributes, yes, but not the negative ones, right? You could always take the best of people and put them, make it your own, and take what's good from everyone and put that on a pedestal to make your, you know, to aspire to be, but obviously not the negative parts.
Right. But do you think it's realistic for most people to achieve at that level?
Well, I think he was, you know, not many people are like Steve Jobs or Richard Branson or Oprah. I think it's, you know, realistic. I don't want to be anyone's like ceiling and to cap their potential. I think it's great to have high aspirations. So I wouldn't be one to be like, no, that's not realistic for you. Why don't you aim lower? So I would actually say, go for it. If that's what you want, you know, strive to be like Steve Jobs and all the positives that he contributed to the world.
Wow. Wait, so I have one last question. So you, this, and this will make a perfect segue into the book. You talk about this idea of turning your passion into your purpose and profession, which is something that I think a lot of people aspire to do, particularly entrepreneurs. And at the same time, you know, you had the funds to do something like go off to India for 6 weeks. And even I recognize at this point in my life that the idea of passion and purpose and all these things are things that in a lot of ways are only relevant to people in privileged circumstances so often, not people who are literally trying to survive. And I just wonder what your take is on that.
Sorry, could you repeat that last part?
Yeah. I mean, so many of these conversations that we have, even the ones on this show and even the stuff I write, I realize often that I'm addressing an audience that, you know, probably is coming from privileged circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it's not really viable for, you know, most people to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to go off to India for 6 weeks and right. basically find my life's purpose.
Right. Right. It is not viable for a lot of people. And in my book, I do share that not everybody has to go across the world to find their life purpose, but there is such thing as what I call explorative action. And you could take that locally, you could do that, you know, side by side while still being in a job, but it's just really about getting outside of your comfort zone. And that does not need to be all the way to India or some, you know, far away place. And I was just fortunate, and that was always something that I had wanted to do. And so I took the opportunity, and, you know, I had saved my vacation. It was actually a paid trip through my work. I had saved my vacation for the whole year to take that trip. And, you know, so people working in companies do have vacation time. They could save their vacation like I did, or they don't have to take a vacation. They could just be, you know, taking explorative action, things outside their comfort zone to explore different things that, you know, bring them joy, things that make them lose track of time, and just keep exploring those things and see what fits, what makes you feel good, and then keep exploring deeper and further. And if you still don't find it, I mean, I talk about purpose in two different ways. There's that, you know, macro level of the bigger purpose of your life's mission and message, and, you know, why you're here, what kind of impact do you want to make? And, you know, that's that bigger purpose that many people, if they haven't found it yet, are seeking. And it's not always easy to find. Some people don't even find it in their lifetime. You know, I found it later, but I was happy to have found it. And if while you're also seeking that greater purpose of your life's mission, I always encourage people to also think about it on a smaller micro level scale, whereas you're thinking of your day's purpose, like going through your day with intention, with purpose. So what is my purpose of this meeting? What is the purpose of this call? What is the purpose or intention of whatever I'm going to do right now? Fill in the blank. And just have micro purposes throughout your day and week, which can build up to, you know, finding your greater purpose, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you open the book by saying that our lives are marked by a singular focus on achievement. We're surrounded by a culture that puts unrelenting pressure on us, which can lead to chronic stress and even premature death due to the demands of this high-pressure environment. People often climb the career ladder through visible sacrifice. And to your point, what do we celebrate? Who do we put on the covers of magazines? People who accomplish extraordinary things. And these are the people that we model ourselves after. So how do you start to let go of that singular focus on achievement while at the same time being able to achieve the things you want to achieve?
Well, achievement can mean different things for different people. So I also talk about what does success mean for you? Like success could mean strictly achievement, financial success, but what about achieving happiness? Like what makes you happy? What brings you joy into your life? So it's really about what does that look like for you? And that's different for different people, right? So what are your values, and what does success look like for you? What does achievement look like for you? And then, you know, it depends. If, you know, when you define that for yourself, then hopefully it's once you become, you know, that's why I kind of wrote this whole book. The whole MAP method is about, you know, the fundamental part of the method is mindfulness, mastering mindfulness. So it's getting deep into what your authentic heart's desires are instead of, you know, constantly being trapped in the monkey mind or in your head, and having that singular focus on whatever that achievement is for you. Whereas when you're mindful, you're able to quiet that, you know, chatter, monkey mind, all the covers of the, you know, magazines that you referred to really tap into what is it that I want? What is it that achievement looks for, like for me? What does success look like for me without being impacted or influenced by external factors or people, you know? Yeah. And then when you really get deep to down to your truest heart desires and align your mind with your heart, then that definition or desire of achievement and success will most likely alter.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you say about mindfulness, and the reason it struck me is because we have a course on attention management. And one of the things I hear often or over and over again from people is, I don't have the time to meditate. And you say we can't afford to treat mindfulness as a perk or luxury. If we leave mindfulness on the yoga mat or meditation room, we're passing up a wealth of potential. It's like allowing our money to sit idle in a zero interest bank account. We must put that resource to work for us. And, you know, at least from my standpoint, when I explained it to people, I said, look, you think you're sacrificing 10 minutes of your time, but what you're getting is an hour of focus in return. So in reality, you're saving time. But make the case for why this is actually worth people setting aside the time to do.
Well, I always, when I have clients, for example, who are not open to meditation or they're a little bit curious, but they don't really see the benefits, what I suggest is to just try it and do like 2 minutes a day consistently for, you know, a couple weeks or more, preferably a month, 30 days, as I say in my book, and see what benefits come your way. Like, what benefits do you reap? And when you see the benefits for yourself, then you're more likely and motivated to continue the practice. Now, for me personally, mindfulness, my meditation practice, which is TM, Transcendental Meditation, when I got initiated and started doing it daily for 20 minutes a day, people close to me who know me very well noticed a big shift in me and said, what are you doing? You've changed. And how I had changed was that I seemed more at peace, more calm. I was less reactive. And I just, you know, they said I had a glow for some reason. Like it was because I was at peace, you know, was that I wasn't as anxious. Not that I have a lot of anxiety to begin with, but I was stressed and I was always on the go and you could see it. You didn't see or sense a sense of peace when you would talk to me previously. This was decades ago, right? And then my meditation practice really turned that around. And then I noticed that I became much more creative and all these creative thoughts. I'd have like downloads during my meditation. And then after meditation, I would go do something really creative, like especially business oriented. When I was just launching Prananas, my corporate wellness company, I had a lot of creative ideas that came to me in my meditation. And so I think a lot of successful business leaders, such as the late Steve Jobs, Oprah Winfrey, Rupert Murdoch, Tony Schwartz, a ton of very, very highly successful business leaders have attributed their success to meditation. And I think it's for a variety of those reasons plus more. I mean, and there's a ton of health benefits on top of that. You know, it's just there's so many benefits to meditating, having a consistent meditation practice. Now, I have clients who are like, oh, yeah, I meditated last week. Well, last week, once a week or twice a week is not going to give you those benefits. It's got to be daily, regularly. If you miss a day, you know, that's okay. Don't beat yourself up over it. Like, don't be hard on yourself. But to really reap the benefits, you must do it daily. And to start with 20 minutes is not what I would suggest. That's the TM method. If you're highly dedicated, great, do it. I was, and I did it, and it worked for me. But for people who are still reluctant, don't have the time, like you said, start with 2 minutes. But I do have to tell you, I was one of those people myself. My mother gave me the same advice you said, was like, she kept telling me, so she started meditating in the early 80s. So she was way ahead of like the whole like trend of meditating. And she kept telling me when she saw me really stressed working at Yahoo and AstraZeneca, you should meditate. I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't have time. There's no way I don't have 5 minutes like extra time to myself. You think I'm going to like spend 40 minutes because it's two sessions of 20 minutes a day for TM. I said, there's absolutely no way I'm doing that. And so my poor mom, she was so persistent and she kept insisting. And, you know, I was just kind of brushing it off and being dismissive for not only 1 or 2, 3 years, but for an entire decade. It took me 10 years to finally wake up and be like, you know what? I'm ready. And I want to start meditating. My mom couldn't believe it. She was so excited. She quickly connected me with a local TM instructor in San Francisco. I was in SF at that time. And I got initiated, but I had to be ready for it. She could insist. And it was coming from my mom, someone I love and respect, but I dismissed it because I wasn't ready for it. So I'm not one to force any client to do it. If meditation isn't for you or it's not for you at this time, because I truly think it's for everyone. I highly believe in it, but I don't believe that it should be imposed on people if they're not ready for it, because it's not going to work for them. They've got to be ready for it. It's got to be the right time, just like it was for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go on to talk about this concept called the 7 A's, and you start out by saying the quality of your life depends on the quality of your choices. Unfortunately, we're not born with the ability to make good decisions. We must learn the critical skill of decision-making, often the hard way. The choices you make throughout your life determine whether or not you will promote yourself to the CEO of your well-being, which I think that line in particular struck me. I thought, yeah, that's the title of our interview, is how to become the CEO of your well-being. But how do you utilize these 7 A's that you talk about to become the CEO of your well-being?
They all build upon each other and they're also used interchangeably. So the 7 A's are about applying better choices to manage stress and build resilience. And they're essentially ways to upgrade both your mindset and your behavior. So I start with the first A, which is adopt a healthy lifestyle. So that is like baseline, foundational, got to adopt that healthy lifestyle to build a resilience reserve so that when you are, you know, faced with challenges, obstacles, stresses, adversity in your life, you have that baseline of a healthy lifestyle and that resilience reserve to be able to, you know, bounce back and also not just bounce back, but bounce forward and really thrive, you know, through the challenges that you face. And then with that, allocating, the second A is allocating play and recovery time. Now, I find that really important because just like an athlete who, you know, performs at the highest level, they also need to recover, rest and recover. And so that applies to the business world and leaders and everyone, you know, recovery time, specifically sleep or just like fun time to play and let go and just have fun is absolutely essential to that healthy lifestyle and being able to reboot and re-energize from your day, because we need to literally go offline to reboot, you know? And so allocate play and recovery time builds from the adopting a healthy lifestyle. Then third, avoid unnecessary stress. So I talk about the ACE method, which is a really a holistic, new, refreshing way to look at stress, to reframe stress. It's also an effective way to upgrade both your mindset and behavior when thinking about stress. So ACE stands for the three different types of stress: acute, chronic, and eustress. Acute is that, you know, necessary stress that we all experience, like the fight or flight, short-term stress. Chronic stress is the one that we want to avoid. It's the long-term stress that is characterized by feelings of hopelessness, helplessness. And when you feel that for greater than 6 months, you've fallen into that state of chronic stress. And it is linked to the leading causes of death in the U.S. So we really want to, at the worst case, you know, avoid that. And then the E for ACE is for eustress, which is a positive stress that fuels your energy to achieve something that might be, you know, short-term stress, like, you know, speaking in public or a job interview or, you know, a physical fitness, like a marathon. A marathon is a, you know, physical fitness challenge, something that could be stressful, but it's a good stress that energizes you to get through that marathon, for example, or race. And then the way to ACE stress using the ACE method is through awareness, change, and empowerment. So step one would be to be aware of the signs and symptoms of the stressors. So identifying what type of stress, acute, chronic, or eustress, and the source of the stress, where it's coming from. Why are you feeling stressed? And then step two would be to change your mindset, right? To choose to reframe the stress using that upgraded mindset so that you can identify your options or opportunities, both again in mindset and behavior. And lastly, step three is to take empowered and effective action. So the goal is to make the most of the situation by moving between acute stress and eustress while choosing to avoid the trap of chronic stress, the killer stress, and that we always have a choice. So, you know, even when we're already experiencing chronic stress, it's not too late to pivot and change course, because we may not be able to avoid the unnecessary stress, but we could change our mindset about it. So, which leads me to the next A, which is about altering the situation. Like, if you can't avoid it, try to alter the situation. And then the next A is, if you can't alter it, adapt to the stressor. The next A is, if you can't adapt to a stressor, then just accept what you cannot change, which will help you adapt more, because you're essentially accepting what you cannot change and you stop wasting your energy on focusing on things that are just out of your control. It's just completely wasted energy. So they all really build. And then lastly, the last A is attend to connection with self, Others, World, and Universe. And this one kind of encapsulates it all because you want to attend to your own self, your authentic self, which we were building in the first part of the book, which is the M for MAP, Master Mindfulness, keeping that connection with yourself and then with others, the world and universe, just bringing it out from the inner circle to the outer circle. But yeah, it all starts, that connection starts with a good relationship with yourself.
Okay, so let's go back to the idea of adapt. You make this distinction between the inner critic and the inner coach, and I think this is highly relevant to creative people because I've noticed every creative person thinks that there's going to be this opportunity to silence their inner critic completely, but anybody who has written a book, as you probably know, has to deal with an inner critic. So can you explain the difference between the inner critic and the inner coach and how to utilize those?
Absolutely. And I love this because even, you know, this is my work and I still have that inner critic. It's like sometimes it doesn't go away forever. It can creep up at any time. But it's all about being mindful of it, right? Again, that's why mindfulness is fundamental. When you're not mindful, that inner critic that says, you know, that basically represents negativity. It could be yapping in your ear all day long about all the negative things, like harping on the mistake that you might have made, like, you know, you blew that presentation. Oh, you suck at writing. You can't write, like whatever it is. If you're not mindful that inner critic is dominating your thoughts, you start to believe that. And you start to think that it's true. But if you're mindful, you're like, oh, that's just my inner critic. And I'm going to choose to now have my inner coach take over. And that inner coach represents positivity and highlights all the positive and coaches you through dealing with that inner critic and anything that can, you know, better yourself. So that's there to coach you through and help you. And so I always say that the inner critic is similar. You know, I use a parallel of two dogs, like the good dog and the bad dog, and the good dog being the inner coach, the bad dog being the inner critic. And so it ends up being about, you know, the dog that you feed is basically the life that you're going to lead. So it determines your life when you decide to listen to the bad dog, the inner critic. Or conversely, if it's the inner coach, you're going to have a much more positive experience because you're choosing to feed the good dog, your inner coach, and choosing to starve the bad dog, the inner critic.
Hmm. So when you talk about acceptance, you say we cannot control everything. We cannot control traffic patterns, people, or the weather. We can't control the stock market, taxes, or the loss of a loved one. In fact, we cannot control most things in the world, no matter how much we try. Moreover, we cannot control nor accurately predict the future. And I think that what I wonder about is when people are struggling to accept something, for example, like a breakup, the pattern that usually follows is rumination. At least in my experience, which is, let me replay this whole thing 1,000 times, figure out, you know, if I would have done this one thing differently, what would have been different? And then, of course, after 7 months of therapy, I wake up and say to myself, well, no matter how many times I replay this damn thing, the outcome is still the same.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How do people break that pattern?
Well, so sometimes it's just a matter of being, having that pity party for yourself and being so upset about it for so long that you just get sick and tired of it. It's like you wake up and you're like, I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired about this, you know, and it's a timing thing, or it's a thing that you got to work through with a therapist, with yourself, and work through all the different levels of, you know, pain, anger, resentment, whatever the different, you know, feelings that you experience, you go through it. It's a process. It's definitely not something that you just snap your fingers and be like, okay, I'm over it. You got to feel through every stage that comes your way. It's kind of like a wave, different waves, right? That come and go. One day you might feel good about it and you're like, okay, I accept this. This is how it is. And I accept that I cannot change the outcome. And this is my new reality. And then the next day, you know, you take a step back and you're like, wait, why did this happen? I don't understand. What if I had done this? Just like you said, you know, and start ruminating again. But, you know, after you do that for so long, it just naturally, it becomes a natural progression to just accept, because you realize that you're not getting anywhere. Nothing's changing with all the worry, stress, rumination. It still doesn't change, right? So it's about reminding yourself, like, has this helped? Has this behavior, these thoughts, this anxiety over all this, has this helped? Like, what has changed? How has this been helpful? And you're not going to be able to really, you know, answer that in a way that, yes, this was helpful. Yes, it did serve you in a way because it helped you process for a certain time. But after some time, it's no longer going to serve you. But everything has a positive intention. So you ruminating, you know, all those things have a positive intention and they're serving you in that time. But eventually it's not going to serve you any longer and you could put that heavy baggage down and move forward.
Wow. Well, you finished up the book by talking about this concept of prana and this whole model called MAP. Can you expand on that and how that plays into this whole idea of being the CEO of your well-being?
Yeah, so we kind of touched a bit already about the MAP, like that the MAP method is a holistic framework to help you navigate your own mindful journey. So your MAP, and that's really your map of authentic self-discovery, better choices, and purposeful growth. So MAP is an acronym for Master Mindfulness, the big M, which is part one of my book. And then the A is for Apply Better Choices to Manage Stress and Build Resilience, which are the seven A's that we discussed. And promote yourself to the CEO of your well-being. And the three P's is the P for MAP. And the MAP method uses the metaphor of a map to chart that purposeful life. So it kind of has a double meaning there. But when you incorporate the MAP method, you're really able to thrive and become, you know, the CEO of your well-being.
So I want to ask you about sort of the stigma that we have around mental health issues, because I come from a culture where anything mental health is highly stigmatized. It's pretty much swept under the rug. Nobody talks about it. We, you know, admitting that you're going to therapy is a big source of shame for people. One, I'm curious how it is in Iranian culture. Is this accepted as normal and acceptable? And how do you start to destigmatize this? Because, you know, in my mind, we shouldn't have to have an Aaron Schwartz story or another founder suicide to say, okay, this is a big issue.
Right. You know, yeah, so my culture is similar to yours. It's not really talked about. Lots of things aren't really talked about. You know, you do kind of sweep things under the rug. You want to, you know, present yourself as fully, you know, like in a way perfect, like nothing's wrong. And you deal with personal issues on the side in private. That's not for, you know, to be talked about publicly. But now, especially in like, since I do corporate wellness programs and a huge focus is on mental and emotional well-being, and especially now getting out of this pandemic, the pandemic has shed a lot of light, and the silver lining of the pandemic is that companies, leaders, people in general have become more aware, open, and accepting to mental health. And it has come to the forefront, which I'm very happy to see, because when I started my corporate wellness company a decade ago, it was still highly stigmatized. And even when I was coaching employees, they were, you know, nervous. They didn't feel comfortable to share. I mean, with me, it was different because I was an external person, but they told me they would not feel comfortable talking to HR or their boss. If they were experiencing anxiety or depression or whatever the case, the psychological safety was not there. Now, you know, with Amy Edmondson's work on psychological safety and just having mental health being in the forefront of wellness, well-being, and employee well-being, it's shifting, thankfully, you know, better late than never, but it is definitely being addressed. And I'm really happy to see that progress now. Still, you know, not enough. It's still a work in progress, but it's something, and something is better than nothing. And it was nothing before. So I'm happy to see the little bit of progress.
Well, I mean, you said better late than never, which is great. I agree with that. And I know you teach, you know, primarily in corporations. I've always wondered why this is the kind of stuff that we're not exposed to when we're in school. things that are essential to our well-being in life, and yet we learn nothing about it in our primary education or even in our secondary education.
I know. I'm with you. I don't know why that's missing, even in college. Like, if you're not going to do it early on, like, nowhere in our education, really, unless you take, I mean, like me, I was so, I was so intrigued by psychology, the study of human behavior, that I studied psychology and learned about, different human behavior and disorders and illness and all that. But not everybody is interested or, chooses psychology as a major, but it should be just mainstream and a foundational, like, prerequisite, in my opinion as well. And it's funny, some of the reviews I read on Amazon for my book, some people actually mentioned, I wish we had this book, my book, in elementary school or high school. That was one of the Amazon reviews, which I was like, yes, I'm with you, definitely. Whether it's my book or just a topic on this, it should be addressed early on, and people should know the significance of taking care of yourself and prioritizing it. And then, of course, the mental health aspect of it too. I mean, the holistic approach to well-being, which includes mental health, it should all be part of it.
I have two final questions for you. You've accomplished more probably than a lot of people do in their lifetime. You've gotten to work with somebody like Steve Jobs. You've gotten to write a book. You've gotten to build a company, and now you get to go and teach this stuff to corporations and have built a business. How has your personal definition of success changed with age?
Well, I was similar to many people who early on, when I thought success was more about, financial success and having that big house and the, multiple homes and nice car and, similar to, I'm sure, your culture, it was more outwardly success, not internal success. And how I've changed is that success for me has shifted from external materialistic success, from, job title and financial success, to true joy and living my passion and purpose and making an impact in the world, like a positive impact. To me, that is success. So it has really shifted from external to internal, but then again, out to external, because I want to also make that, that dent in the universe to make meaningful impact.
So I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
What do you think it is that makes someone unmistakable?
Yeah.
Unmistakable. Can you expand on that, please?
Well, I mean, considering I wrote a book called Unmistakable, and apparently when you write a book that's titled that, you have to define it. So I define it as what nobody else could do but you in the way that you do it. But people have given me all sorts of answers to this question. So,
yeah, I mean, I love that. I would define it as, I would define it as being, the best that you could be, basically the CEO of your well-being and just taking charge of your life. I mean, I would define it that way.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and insights and wisdom with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, the book, and everything that you're up to?
People can find out more about me at my website, nazbeheshti.com, for my corporate wellness company, Prana Naz. It would be prananaz.com. And then I'm on all social media as Naz Beheshti on Twitter, LinkedIn, Clubhouse, and then on Facebook, I'm Naz Beheshti Speaker. And everywhere else, I'm Naz Beheshti. And you could find me everywhere, social media and on my websites.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member, who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.